This is Primetime on KTEP, a program that focuses on economic development, mobility, security, and quality of life issues in El Paso and surrounding areas.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of El Paso Primetime. I'm Richard Dayub, Thunderbird Management Consulting, and your host for this show today. And with me today, starting the new year, kind of starting the new year with us, are our guests from the El Paso Opera. And we have with us our executive director, Ariane Marcy, and the artistic director, Ms. Cherry Duke, Professor Duke, UTEP.
Both.
Both. Thank you both for being on the show.
Thanks, Richard.
I can say honestly that in the years I've been doing this, we've never had, I'm embarrassed to say, the opera company on the show, and it's way overdue.
Wow.
So thank you for taking the time to come on.
We are thrilled to be here. Thank
you
very much.
Happy to be here, yes.
Thank you. So we have a lot to talk about, and let's begin, first of all, with some of the more critical things, which is the upcoming opera performances, and then we can talk about the organization itself.
Okay.
So why don't you cue us here on what's coming up really quickly.
Okay. Opening on January 30th is our big show for this season, La Boheme. We have five performances, January 30th, February 1st, February 3rd, February 5th, and February 7th. And this will be at St. Roger's Depot. We're going back to a place that we've been to a couple times for an intimate and immersive setting to tell, I think, what is probably the most beloved of all operas. Even if you don't know opera, everybody knows La Boheme, has heard La Boheme, and I've been stopped on the street and told, oh, thank God you're finally doing La Boheme, because people just love it. And I love that they love it. So
I would add to that, I've not been like a major opera fan, but I told you when we met, La Boheme, my mother-in-law performed in. And so I fell in love with it. And then I didn't tell you this, but long, long time ago as a kid, my uncle turned me on to La Traviata, which I fell in love with also.
Another beautiful opera.
It is. And so I think that what you're doing for this community is so, so incredibly important as we continue to grow our economy and expand our quality of life initiatives.
Absolutely.
We have all these things that we're bringing or have brought for quality of life. Opera should be at the top of that list. So you look like you're dying to say something.
I'm just so excited by everything, all the truth you're laying down
here, Richard.
We
agree with all of that.
It's also
important. You know how infrequently that is said to me?
The quality of life thing, I want to circle back to that because I took the helm, I suppose, of artistic director within the last year. So it's relatively new for me.
Yeah.
And Ariane and I have had a lot of talks, existential crisis sort of talks, not crisis, but what sort of an organization do we want to be and how can we contribute to El Paso? And we've agreed that we really aspire to be a community service organization that serves our neighbors through the medium of opera. So I'm pleased that you feel it's important. We certainly do. And I know that if you come, when you come to see La Boheme at St. Roger's Depot, that you're going to leave refreshed and revitalized and inspired. And maybe you'll shed a few tears, but it's going to be the good kind. And you're going to have a fun time. We make sure, we guarantee, that when you come to our shows, you're going to have a great time.
Yep. By the way, just for the benefit of our listening audience logistically, St. Roger's Depot, for those of you who are not familiar with it, I promise you, you're familiar with the facility.
Right.
Because it was part of the railroad depot for many, many, many years. And Isha and her husband purchased that property and transformed it. And it's a beautiful, beautiful
venue
with great acoustics.
They've done a great job of appreciating the beauty and the history of the building while also updating it in ways that needed to be updated. So again, you can tell that people who loved the building and appreciate its historical significance for the city were the ones that, you know, that restored it. And this is our third show performing at St. Roger's, and it's a place we love to go back to. Not only does it provide some really interesting and immersive performance opportunities, but it's a beautiful space. And
art in the lobby is gorgeous.
Exactly, the art and the artwork and the mosaics, and just being able to, one of the things that we prefer over St. Roger's Depot than perhaps some of the other venues is that we can provide an experience from the second someone arrives to the second they leave. It's not just what we put on stage, right? It's your experience as you come in and have your ticket scanned, your experience at the bar, your experience before the show at intermission. At other venues, we don't have control over all those things because it's run by different entities. When we go to St. Roger's Depot, it's our team that controls from beginning to end, and it's always our goal. Everything under our control is done well, and we leave you wanting more. My idea or my hope is that everyone who puts their head on the pillow at the end of the night is, thinking of some wonderful experience they had at some point throughout the evening. And so our ability to be in control of all those touch points is really important for the audience experience.
It's important for our audience to know this is your 32nd season.
32 years.
So that's pretty incredible.
It is, because other cities around the country with far bigger populations, far bigger tax bases, those upper companies are closing. And yet we are in our 32nd season of continuous performance through economic downturns, through pandemics. We pivot. We are the phoenix that rises from whatever ashes are, upon us for that season. There's always something. But it's our small size allows us to navigate some of those difficult environmental situations better than if we were a huge opera company with a tremendous staff. Our size gives us flexibility.
Yes, excellent. And so as we talk about this, hopefully for our listeners, we're garnering excitement and interest. So with that as a cue, how do they get tickets to the opera?
Oh, it's very easy. epopera.org. epopera.org. You can buy your tickets right there.
And that's probably the easiest way rather than calling into the...
You can do either. Absolutely. I mean, things are easy online. We've tried to make it as easy as possible. Google El Paso Opera. We're what's going to come up. It's going to be all of our social media handles are El Paso Opera. Yes, our website is EP Opera. It was established years ago, so we would love to get those all in conjunction with each other, but I digress.
Yeah, call the office if that's more convenient for you, and Sydney or Holly or Ariane will help you out, or maybe even Audrey.
Right. We have a UTEP intern who we literally were training on the phones today. So,
well, I'll give them the phone number, but you don't have to worry about writing it down if you're driving.
That's true.
Please don't write it down if you're driving. And you can always pull it up from the website.
Yeah.
But it's, of course, 915-581-5534. Or the easiest way is just to go to epopera.org. Even I can remember that.
And I will say, we are the only entity selling tickets to this event. You don't go to Ticketmaster, you don't go to Live Nation, but also don't go to any third-party sellers. Come directly to us, because sometimes the third-party sellers, we know they jack up those prices or they promise things that don't come through. Go directly to the organization. You're going to spend less, and you're going to get the service that comes with having us take care of you.
So one of the notes that we had that you shared with me in preparation for this interview is, and you wrote it out, what to expect, the plot, the attire, the length, intermissions, things that people who perhaps have never been to an opera might appreciate knowing in advance.
Absolutely. Why don't you start with the plot? I think that's a major point.
Boy meets girl. They fall in love. They fight a lot. They break up. They get back together. She dies. The end. No. That's kind of it.
It's opera, so the soprano always dies.
Yeah, the men never die in the opera, but that, I digress. No, there's four dudes. There's four men that are all artists of different kinds. One's a painter, one's a writer, one's a philosopher, one is a musician, and they live in this really ratty apartment in Paris because they're poor. They're the quintessential starving artist. And we meet them and we discover how jolly they are despite their financial difficulties. One of them comes in having actually had a good weekend, and he's got money and he's got some food and wine. And they decide, well, we're not going to eat here. We're going to go out and celebrate. And the writer says, I'll stay behind for a few minutes. I got to finish this article or I won't ever get another booking from that magazine or whatever. Knock, 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 and a pretty young lady is at the door saying, my candle blew out. Can you light my candle?
Well, you're quite the actress.
She yes, is. Thank you. Anyway, Rodolfo is the writer. Mimi walks in, and it's the meet cute, to use the film parlance, and they fall in love. And then they end up going to meet all the buddies at the cafe, where we meet the painter's ex-girlfriend, who sings the most well-known aria in all of opera, Quando Menvo, and she's a really flashy, tardy kind of person, and she's there with her sugar daddy, and ends up dumping sugar daddy and going back with the painter. That's all before intermission. That's just an hour. It's really quite short. Then we have a nice intermission where you can go and have some snacks and maybe another cocktail if you choose. Then we go back for another just a short hour-long second half, during which we realize that both couples have been fighting a lot and are toying with the idea of breaking up. And they go back and forth like that a little
don't
bit.
Don't deliver the punchline now. We want to save that for the...
Dum-dum-dum!
Okay.
You know, I will withhold and not give any spoilers, but I also want to say that opera is a little different from movies or novels in that most of the time when you go to the opera, it's fine to know the ending because it's the journey that you take with the music and the acting and the performances that you're there to see. And most folks who've ever been to the opera have seen La Bohème before, and yet they want to go back. So they know how it ends. And if you're seeing it for the first time, I'm not going to tell you today how it ends, even though I kind of already did. But anyway, the point is, sometimes it can be more helpful when you go to the opera to already know the plot, because our singers will be performing in Italian. They are singing all their lines in the Italian language, and we have projected translations on screens all around the room. So you can read along if that's what you want to do
in English and Spanish.
In English and Spanish. And we were the first company, by the way, to do bilingual super titles.
That's great. Because you're right. For those, particularly those who have never attended before, they might get a little lost not understanding Italian.
Right.
Sure. I know that the second time or third time I watch a movie or read a book, I get a lot more out of it. So you're not gonna hurt your experience by reading the entire plot before you go. In fact, you might really enhance it. You don't have to know everything about opera. You don't have to know anything. But if you want to take that extra step, I encourage it.
Well, and one of the things that, you know, kind of encourages repeat attendance, if it were, is that different directors take on different concepts for the show. So when we decide to do La Bohème, then the first step is hiring a stage director. The stage director gets to make that artistic choice of how they're going to present this. And so why don't you speak a little bit about Helena and her approach to this?
Helena Binder and I have been friends since I sang with New York City Opera in the early 2000s, and I was really thrilled that she was able to come and be our director for this. And because we're in St. Rogers Depot, which is not the Abraham Chavez, we had to make some different kinds of artistic choices. And I knew that she had some experience in presenting La Bohème in a space not so dissimilar to St. Rogers. And to that end, she has put it into the 1920s, inspired by Ernest Hemingway's book, A Movable Feast. And so the original story was written to be set in the middle of the 1800s, but updating it doesn't lose any of the integrity of the story. So ours will be set in the flashy 1920s, still in Paris, and it's a concept that she has done before to great success.
So this is for the benefit of our audience, because a lot of folks who are not aficionados, who have perhaps never attended an opera, have preconceived notions of how they have to be dressed in order to come to the performance and not be embarrassed. Of course, if you've ever gone, and I'm sure you have, the New York operas, the San Francisco opera, tuxedos, black tie,
right,
are pretty standard. But that's a completely different world.
I mean, that's not El Paso, right?
It is like, not El Paso.
But you know what? If you really want to come in your tuxedo and your evening gown, do it.
We have people that do, but we also have people.
You can also wear your shorts. I mean,
Maybe not shorts. It'll be January, but
a little more casual attire.
Right. Well, I always say whatever you would wear to a show at the Plaza or a show at the Chavez, you would be welcome at the opera. We have no such aspirations to be stuffy and inaccessible. In fact, we work really hard to show that opera is for everyone and that everyone can feel comfortable in our environment. And so I encourage you to dress so that you feel good about what you are wearing and you know, something nice that you, again, like you might wear to a concert or to a Broadway show at the Plaza.
But, you know, Great. You mentioned New York, Richard, and I've been to the Metropolitan Opera in New York City many times and seen people in T-shirts and jeans.
Really?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And, you know,
it is the center of the bohemian world.
That's true.
Sure. I mean, at the same performance in New York where you might see someone in a tuxedo, you might see someone in a sport coat, you might see someone in an evening gown, you might see someone in a T-shirt and jeans.
So, and by the way, this is sort of an additional positive note for our audience. St. Rogers has free parking.
It does.
Yeah.
Right?
It can save you at least $10 over the Chavez.
And that's a nice thing, again, about pulling it out of downtown. Thank you.
It's still kind of downtown, but it's not, you know, that.
Right, it's downtown adjacent is what I always say.
Yes.
It is free and ample parking, and you know, if there's a lot going down on downtown these days, which is a wonderful problem to have, but not necessarily a wonderful thing to experience when you're on your way to a show. And so it's great. Yeah, you don't have to worry about the traffic and searching for parking or paying for parking for that matter. So,
well, so that kind of falls under the heading that you sent me, which is the category of misconceptions about opera. Is there anything else you want to expand on related to the misconceptions as you put it?
You know, yeah, I mean, opera has a lot of preconceived notions that we've touched on, like you said. People feel that it's only for a certain type of person, only for a certain educated, socioeconomic, all of those.
Or a person who wears a certain thing.
Right. And so we have worked very hard to try to dispel that notion with the shows that we've done and the welcoming atmosphere that we have at all of our events. And it, you know, it just, we want to make sure that everyone, again, enjoys themselves, using those super titles as a wonderful example. I'm one of those people who wants to know every word that's being spoken. I am going to sit where
or
I can.
Or sung, as it were.
Or sung, pardon me, right? I want to sit where I can see the translations and I can follow along and I want to know every minute detail. My husband does not. He'll read the synopsis that's in the program, and then he lets go, and he just sits back and he wants to enjoy it.
He enjoys the performance.
He does not read the super titles. Mm-hmm. So it's by having we have the synopsis that you can read in advance. We have the super titles, or you can choose not to use them. It's kind of a choose-your-own-adventure. Choose which way you want to experience it. But neither way is wrong. And both ways, you end up enjoying it in the manner of which you wanted to.
Thank you. So you mentioned to me earlier before we began recording that you have a season upcoming of one-act performances that you're going to share with the community. In what way?
So our show that follows La Boheme, which again is January 3rd to February 7th, is a show that we'll be touring with in May, and it's called Bohemios. And I'll let Cherry speak a little bit more about the actual show. But what we are doing is taking that on a tour to four different areas of the community, and we're offering this for free. So it's we want to, again, remove any barrier to people enjoying our art form. And we're taking it one step further, and we're not asking people to come to us. We are literally going into community centers of the city and performing for free for the people in that neighborhood, which is something that we are very excited about, and just the opportunity to reach new people and share this. And again, let me pass it to Cherry to talk about Bohemios.
Okay, so the name Bohemios, you may notice a little bit of similarity between that title and the title La Boheme. It's the same root word that we know in English, bohemian. And Bohemios is the Spanish word for bohemians. But it is not just a Spanish, it is in Spanish, but it is not a Spanish translation of the Italian opera La Bohème. It is a zarzuela, a Spanish operetta, or similar to musical theater with operatic singing, that is a story similar, kind of, sort of, to La Bohème, but it's not the same story. It's very, very light. We meet musicians again. We meet a composer and a writer who are writing an opera together, and we meet a young woman who aspires to be an opera singer and has been secretly learning this composer's music and singing it in her apartment, and he hears it because he's her neighbor, but they've never met. And he's like, who's singing my music and why? And anyway, at the end of the show, they end up getting to perform together. And of course, there's all sorts of shenanigans in between. It's light. It's funny. It's tuneful. It's sung,
short.
It's short. It's 1 hour long total. It is sung in Spanish. And there is spoken dialogue, which we've translated into English. So it's a true bilingual experience.
And you perform this across the community in various locations.
The first location is the Mexican consulate downtown.
Ideal.
Yeah.
Right? And then we will go to the Far East, to the Beast Recreation Center, and then we'll go to the Lower Valley, the Silvia Carreon Recreation Center, and our final performance will be in the Upper Valley, at the Keystone Heritage Park. And both our first performance and our last performance of this little tour will have reception so that we can really feel celebratory, and we're very much looking forward to sharing all of this with our neighbors for free.
This is an aside, but Mauricio, who is the Council General, has been... And they've had some great people there in that post before, but he has set the standard. He's the most amazing council general we've ever had, and he is so committed to our region and both sides of the border.
Absolutely.
Does so much on both sides.
It's wonderful, right? Yeah.
And so I'm thrilled to see that they're involved with you as well. So as we wind down, because we're running a little bit short on time, as we always seem to do, I'd like to just take a moment. There's far too many people to thank within your organization, but you might want to just touch on perhaps a few names. You have a very impressive board.
We do.
And you have some great members of the organization.
Sure. You know, I'm very blessed to have worked with some amazing people. My current president of the board is Jay Stratton. Incoming president is Omar Rodriguez. My most recent two presidents were Chelsea Lamego with Fund Miner and Stacy Hunt Spear with Hunt Companies. So I've just had these dynamic leaders that I've been blessed to work with. I've been with the opera for 8.5 years. So, and we've had some of those economic downturns and the pandemic and things. And so it really has been working closely with our board. Also, you know, we have longstanding donors and supporters with the Fernandez family and Flow Networks, the Shylaw Family Foundation, like I said, Hunt Companies, Hussteiner Fine Arts Trust, MCAD, Bonnie Brooks Foundation. I'm positive I'm leaving somebody off that.
Well, let's not forget Isha and Steve, who make it possible for us to work at St. Rogers Depot.
Mm-hmm. The Rogers family has always been extremely supportive of opera in El Paso through a variety of our different directors. We are a small organization, but we have a core of people who love us and support us and are determined for us to stay here. Our honorary board member, Wilma Saltzman, is a wonderful example of that. I always joke that she willed us into being and has supported us every day ever since. So,
well, in the few moments we have left, if you'd like to touch on one of the points we hadn't gotten to yet, which is future seasons, planning, and how you do what you do.
Well, that takes a while to discuss, but okay. We are literally in the process of planning next year. And we start with, you know, looking at what we feel has worked, what hasn't, but also always trying to improve the audience experience while presenting the highest quality art we can present while staying in budget and coming in the black every year, which as a nonprofit arts organization is far harder than it sounds. And so it's my job to take what Cherry's vision is and execute all of those things and raise the money and budget the money so that we can actually present what she'd like to do. And do you want to speak quickly on how you choose what we do?
Well, I don't really want to talk about how we choose the pieces so much as I want to talk about that we are producing opera locally with a blend of local talent and the finest talent that we can get from around the country or around the world. So, for example, with La Boheme, I mentioned Helena Binder. She lives in Vermont. We're bringing in principal artists from all over the country. One of them actually lives here in town, and he's sung at the major opera companies all over the country, Levi Hernandez. But the team that makes it go, the core team is El Paso-based and lives in El Paso, and we're going to do that same thing with our main stage show in the following season, bringing in the finest artists that we can to for our locally produced show. And so we are different from the Broadway series, for example, that goes into the convention center in the plaza.
That's a touring company. Right. And what I always say, we've put together the show brick by brick, detail by detail, and have lived it for about 15 months before it actually hits the stage. Because again, small staff, lots of details, lots of checklists.
Well, thank you both for being on the show, for taking the time. For those of you who may have tuned in a few minutes after the show began, we are interviewing Ariane Marcy, who is the executive director of the El Paso Opera. And we have with us Cherry Duke, who is the artistic director. And I personally want to thank you for what you do for the community and the bringing of the culture and the quality of life, additional quality of life initiatives, so important to our economy, so important to our culture and our citizens, our community itself. So I want to thank you both for being on the show. I wish our audience a very happy new year, about 10 days late, but nonetheless a very happy, prosperous, healthy new year to all of you. And I will also remind you, as I usually do, you're listening to KTEP. This is your NPR station for the Southwest. We're a nonprofit radio station, and if you are already a member, thank you. If you are not yet a member, please consider becoming one. You can become a one-time contributor for however little or much you wish to give. Or as I am, you can become a sustaining member and support this organization throughout the year. And given what happened this past year with the government and the lack of funding now that comes for all public media, we need your support even more than before. So think about us. Start your new year on the right foot and be generous. Be kind to us. Continue listening. Thank you for being with us this Saturday, and have a great, happy day and a happy new year.
El Paso Primetime is a production of KTEP. Views expressed by the host and guest don't necessarily reflect those of KTEP. For inquiries about our public affairs programming, email ktep@utep.edu. Richard Dayoub appears courtesy of Thunderbird Consulting. The producer and editor is Daisy Morales. The show is recorded at the Communication Department at the University of Texas at El Paso. To learn more about the program or to listen to past episodes, visit ktep.org.